Thank you for joining us here at Christ Fellowship for our online message podcast.
Hey, if you're a guest, let me just welcome you. I hope that we're a pretty simple church. We love people really well, I hope, and we love Jesus more than we love people. I'm sorry about that, but we do. People are right behind, but we hope that you feel welcome this morning. But more than that, we hope that you experience the presence of God, the living God. That's why we come. We don't come to hear just the pastor. Like, we're not that kind of church. We don't just come to hear an amazing band, which they are incredible, but that's not why we come. We come to be in community, to center on the presence of God, because that's where everything changes. And that's my hope for you today, that you would experience that. So today we're going to continue this series that I absolutely love, because we're taking my love for sports and my love for Jesus, and we're putting them together. And that's an incredible series right there. Any amens in the house, right? When we take sports and Jesus, boom, I think it's incredible. So we've been talking about, what does it look like to rally, right? As I've been studying, I've been thinking of just different sports teams that I've been on where we've had a rally. And I was thinking back this one game my senior year playing football. We were playing our rival. We were undefeated at the time. We were favored to win the game. It was at home. All the people there cheering on. We were the chieftains, almost the tribe. So God was working in my heart already then. We were losing the game in the fourth quarter. And you know, in the fourth quarter, your possessions get fewer and fewer opportunities. So each possession feels like there's more stress and more pressure to actually produce and to come up with a touchdown, because we were losing, all right? So now we're in the fourth quarter, probably our last possession. We might get one more, but we're not going to have much time. And we're losing. And we hadn't lost a regular season game for 3 years, right? Or actually, we lost our first 3 years, but that doesn't matter. Y'all don't care about that. But anyhow, we were losing, and that was not what was expected. And the air was sucked out of the stadium. You ever been to a stadium where, like, there's just like, this is not going well. There's no hope. And so it was just quiet. And we were driving a little bit, getting a little momentum. Our rally was coming back. And I remember I was in the huddle. I played tailback. And so the receiver comes in and he calls the play. And I was like, I cannot wait to watch this. Because I'm playing tailback and I'm not part of the play at this point. I just get to watch, right? You know, some people do that in the field. And so the quarterback hikes the ball. My buddy Alex gets the ball, takes one step, and throws a spot pass, all right? So now I'm going to play receiver, so I'm going to play all the positions today. So my buddy Chad catches the ball on the outside the hash. He catches the ball. He fakes like he's going to run it, right? So guess what that corner does? He bites hard, and guess what that safety does that has the back half of the field? He also bites hard. So guess what? That receiver that was standing beside Chad, when the play started, is running down the sideline wide open. So he fakes it, he steps back, and Chad throws the ball to my buddy, Jeremy, who is really, really fast, like really fast, catches the ball in stride and runs into the end zone, and we win the game. Incredible, incredible. Well, the crowd goes crazy, right? Why? Because we love a good rally, right? We love when there is no hope and there is a comeback. And so what we've been looking like, man, we love that in sports, but here's the reality. What I see is there's oftentimes opportunities in life for that same kind of rally. And when I read the scriptures, I see time and time again, God taking people that the world would say, you got no hope. There's no chance you can come back from this sickness or this career thing. There's no chance. And what I see God do consistently in the scriptures and say, hey, just watch what I'm gonna do. And he brings a rally. And so we've been talking in this series about, what does it look like for us to see a rally in our life, in an area that we've just left for dead, a dream that we put on the shelf, something that we've just said, you know what, it's not gonna happen. And my hope is for this series that we would be encouraged and inspired to believe that when God's involved, there's no impossibilities, right? No impossibilities. And so that's the premise of this series. And so today we're going to continue looking at a couple characters in the scriptures that I think we can learn from. Last week we talked about Elijah and what does it look like to stage a comeback. And the guy that followed Elijah, his name is Elisha. It's kind of close there. Elijah was the predecessor of Elisha, another prophet, a man of God. And he was an incredible man, anointed by God to hear God and speak on behalf of God to the people. And at some point, though, there's something happening. An opposing king, the king of Syria, is trying to make an attack on Elijah and his people. And so every time the king would say, hey, here's our strategy, we're going to attack over here, Elijah would be given a word from God, would know what's coming, and he would tell his king, and his king would plan it, right? He would foil the plans of the king of Syria, and it was not good. And the king of Syria was like, what is up with this? It's like somebody is in my huddle, Some of you have been there, right? It's like when you stand up real close to the line of scrimmage and try to listen when you're playing backyard football. You know what I'm talking about. You've done it before. And he's like, well, how do they know what I'm getting ready to do? And one of his people say, you know what? There's a guy, his name is Elisha. And he hears from God, and he knows what we're going to do. And so the king says, listen, we gotta get this guy. We got to take him out. And so he sends his army to the place where Elisha and his servant are staying the night in this city. And he sends all his horses and chariots, and they surround the city, okay? Now, this is the middle of the night. So in the morning, you know, Elisha's servant gets the coffee going, and he takes the Joe outside. He walks out the door. All around the city are chariots and horses that he know are going to try to kill him. That's a moment where you need a rally. That's when your back is up against the wall. What do you do? And so he did what any servant does. He goes back in to talk to Elijah. And I always think of Elijah as this bad, bad dude, like, and this little servant's like Danielson. Like, this is what you're like learning, you know? And he goes in to talk to the guy, and he says, listen, there are horses and chariots all around the city. What are we going to do, Elisha? My back is up against the wall. We are going to be dead. There's no options. They are all around us. Some of us are feeling that way this morning. All around us, there's no option. There's no hope. My marriage, my relationships, my career, you put it in there. And he looks to Elijah, and this is what Elijah said, the master. He says, do not be afraid. But did you see the guys out there? He said, listen, do not be afraid. And listen to what he says. This was him. He says, for those who are with us are far more than those who are with them. And he got a thing in his head. He's like, man, I just saw, like, have you had a cup of coffee yet, Elisha? Because you're not, like, thinking, like, I just saw all the people around it. And Elisha, it's just you and me, man. Like there's two versus however many. And Elisha says, no, listen. There's more with us than with them. Oh, my goodness. And then Elijah does something interesting. He prays that the young man would have eyes to see what Elijah knows. And he prays, and God opens up his eyes, and he goes back out where he had just seen all the men around him. This time, he sees angels of fire, chariots of fire, surrounded all around the physical chariots. And he realizes what Elijah was saying. There really were more with them and on their side than with the enemy. And here's the word for some of you this morning. This is what I never want us to do, to downplay just because we can't see God moving what he's actually doing. Like, I never want to be the kind of guy who underestimates when I see a circumstance, I see something happen, and everything looks like it's against me, to underestimate the power of God to be working in that circumstance. I never want to be that person. So maybe for you today, you're that person that feels like, man, I got no hope. I feel like everybody is against me at work. All these things are going off. Here's what I want to tell you. God is with you, and he is working on your behalf for his glory today in our victories and in our defeats. In the days where we're on the mountaintop and giving high fives, but also when we are in pain and crying and calling out to God, telling him the truth like we talked about last week. God is with us, and he is doing more than we could ever imagine. And so one of the ways that I want to encourage you is to ask God this simple request. God, will you help me to see what you're doing that I can't see right now? Because when we begin to see what God is doing that doesn't make sense or isn't what the physical is happening, it encourages us to believe that God really is who he said he is and that he knows no impossibilities. And one of the stories that we're going to look at today is the story of Daniel. And we see this happen exactly. So if you have your Bible, I want you to turn to Daniel. If you have your Bible app, go ahead and open that up. We're in Daniel today. And I want to look at Daniel, and I want to see if we can learn anything about what it looks like to stage a comeback, to come back in a rally when a situation is not looking good in our life. And so let me just give you a little background. Daniel is a Jew, and there's a king, King Nebuchadnezzar, and he is taking up territory. He is just chewing up and spitting out people. He's taking territory in the area. And so King Nebuchadnezzar has just besieged Judah where Daniel was located, all right? And so the king is taking territory, and then we get to verse 3 of chapter 1 of Daniel, and it says, then the king commanded Ashpenaz, which is a great name for a baby if you're looking for a name there, Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, and if your name's that, I'm so sorry, like God loves you. He says, he told his chief eunuch to bring some of the people of Israel that they had just besieged. He said, bring some of the people from Israel, both the royal family and of nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature of the language and the language of the Chaldeans. And the king assigned them a daily portion of his food that the king ate and the wine that he drank, and they were to be educated for 3 years. And at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among those, here we go, is Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. So let me just give you a quick bio on Daniel at this point in his life. Most theologians, man, I'm all over the place today. Most theologians believe that Daniel was about 17 years old when this happened, right? 17 years old. And what we got to see in this picture is that Daniel is captured. And so really what he has become is a prisoner of war, okay? I don't want us to miss out on this, that he is now doing something he against what he had hoped for, okay? He's now a prisoner of war, a captive in a land that is not his for a non-Jewish king. And he's being forced to learn a pagan culture, history, and language. As a Jewish boy who had a high value for the Jewish systems and traditions, this would have been terrible, terrible news. And what we see here early on is that Daniel found himself up against the ropes, needing to understand what does a rally look like in this moment. And here's the first truth that I want you to write down today, is that God is not surprised and he is not confused at your present circumstance. Somebody just needs to hear that this morning. God is not surprised and he's not confused at your present circumstance. He's not like, man, she didn't get the job. What are we gonna do now? Or the person they thought they were gonna marry is not want to marry them. They ran off with somebody else. Man, there's no way I can pick out of 7 billion people somebody else for this person to marry. I want you to hear this because some of us are in really tough spots this morning. If we just be honest and cut the church stuff, hard spots right now. And I want you to hear me. God is not confused and he is not surprised in the moment that you find yourself in your life. And what we see is he was not confused that Daniel was taken a captive by King Nebuchadnezzar. We see it in verse 2 here. It says, and the Lord gave the king of Judah into his hands. Who gave the king of Judah into the hands of King Nebuchadnezzar? The Lord. You mean God was in the midst of something that looks so terrible and seems like it would only be bad? Yeah, that's one of the themes that we see in the book of Daniel, is that God is sovereign, that he is in all things and working in all things. You mean Daniel was captured and he's going to be working for a king and he's got to learn a culture that's not his own and literature that's not his own? Yeah. God wasn't surprised and he wasn't confused, and he's not surprised or confused in your circumstance either. You need to hear that this morning. But the other thing that we learn from this early stage is something that I think is so important that we all hear, and this is real practical wisdom, is we are called to grow where we are planted. You've heard that probably before. Grow where you're planted. I remember one of my good friends up in Ohio, he owned a tattoo studio, and therefore, guess what? He had a lot of tattoos. And not only did he have a sleeve, but he had 3 rugged crosses on his neck. It was an incredible dude. And we went on a mission trip, and I was taking him back to the airport, and I was sharing some disappointments that I had up until this point with my career. Like, I was hoping that God was going to open some doors, and I was hoping to, you know, X, Y, and Z would happen, but it hadn't happened. And so I'm voicing this, hoping that he would kind of coddle me a little bit. Anybody else ever done that, right? And he looks at me and says, I think this is what you need to hear. You need to grow where you're planted, Derek. I was like, ouch. But he was so spot on, right? I was so busy thinking about the future or thinking about what I had missed out on that I wasn't rooted in being faithful what God had put in my hands to do of that day, for that day, right? And what we see Daniel do is, man, you gotta realize Daniel was a young guy, 17. Can you imagine the dreams and hopes that he would have had? Like, we know from the text that the king only picked like the cream of the crop people, right? He was a brilliant thinker. He was a great strategist. He was also handsome. Like, he had everything. He's like, man, I want that guy on my team. And he picked him. And you got to think, when Daniel is laying at bed at night when he's 14, 15, 16 years old, he is dreaming of what could be in his life. What amazing thing Daniel is going to do with all that God had given him. in his person, right? What am I going to do? What am I going to build? Am I going to build the greatest altar? Am I going to, you know, what am I going to do? And then he finds himself as a captive in a land that's not his, forced to learn from a culture that's not his. Talk about disappointment. But in the midst of that, what we see Daniel do is he was willing to grow where he was planted. He embraced the moment, he embraced the present, and he trusted God with the process. And some of us know the story. They go in, and he didn't want to defile himself with his Jewish law, and so he asked that they wouldn't eat the king's food and eat vegetables, and said that's how hardcore he was, just going to eat vegetables. Like, that's crazy, right? You guys know that. I'm going to eat vegetables. Okay, God better have told that right to you, but... So he eats vegetables for 10 days, but he asks the question, hey, can I do this? So he even is faithful to the authority in his life, which is incredible, right? And he says, you know what? Yeah, go ahead and do that for 10 days. And after 10 days, they go back and they assess the men, and the four of them, Daniel and his three friends, appeared better and in better shape than the other ones. And so he said, man, keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. And look at what happens in verse 17. He says, as for the four youths, Daniel and his three friends, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, who gave them learning and skills? God. God did. Man, don't underestimate what God can do even when you're really disappointed. What he can birth in you and bring about in your life. Verse 18, it says, at the end of the time when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before the king, and the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in his kingdom. You see, Daniel embraced where he was at. He was willing to grow where he was planted, even though it wasn't where he expected to be. And some of us that are hoping for a rally in our life, our careers, our relationships, our responsibility or our authority in community, like, we need to hear this. Sometimes we just got to be faithful with what God has for us today. And it was these three thoughts that kept coming to me this week. And so I just want to break them down a little bit. Here's the thought process, is that your faithfulness cultivates your character. Your character develops your reputation. And your reputation influences your future. And I would love for you to write that down. Your faithfulness cultivates your character. Your character develops your reputation. And your reputation influences your future, right? See, it's in the moments where we find ourselves like, God, why am I here? God, these people are against me. I'm frustrated. Things aren't happening the way I hope they would happen. In those moments, what I believe God has given us an opportunity to do is to be faithful when it's not fun, so that we can be conformed to the image of a son. You hear me on that? In the moments that life is throwing us curveballs and we're like, what is going on right now? This is not what I expected. Things aren't going the way I am. My finances aren't where they want. My job opportunities, I got passed over last week. In those moments, we have an opportunity to be faithful. To be faithful. Nothing else. Be faithful. And in those moments when it's not fun, God is conforming us in the image of his son. And in those moments where life is throwing us hard things and we feel like our back's up against the wall, maybe God is producing in you compassion, patience, or another word is long-suffering. We don't like that term, do we? Long-suffering. Maybe he's doing something and refining you and molding you into the image of a son through that. Because I think being faithful, it cultivates our character. And then our character, it develops our reputation, right? I love how Abraham Lincoln sets it up. He said, our character is like a tree and our reputation is like the shadow that it casts. Like, the tree doesn't change. It is what it is. That's our character. But the shadow, depending on where I'm standing and I look at it, it may change a little bit, right? And the only way to change your reputation, it's not to go try to spin anything. It's to be consistent in your character over time. That's the only way, right? That's the only way to go about changing the reputation that people have of you, is to be consistent in your character, especially in times where you got to be faithful when things don't make sense. And then that faithfulness that develops our character, that character, it develops our reputation. That reputation influences our future, right? Like, let me just hear me this. If Daniel wasn't faithful as a captive, he never would have been invited to the king's table. Do you know that? Never would have been invited, right? If it wasn't for his reputation, he never would have been invited to the king to say, hey, help me out. I need some problems. And when he told him, he wouldn't have been lifted up and been elevated if he wasn't faithful in the little, right? I remember when I was a young engineer and I got a job and had a rare opportunity to sit down with the plant manager of our facility. I was so excited. I was nervous. My hands were all sweaty. And I got into his office, and we sat down at a table because his office wasn't like mine. I didn't have room for a table, but he had the corner office with the room for the table, right? You guys know what I'm talking about. So he says, sit down, Derek, and I sit down with him. And we began to small talk a little bit, and then he says, well, what do you want to be someday? Like, where are you hoping this career takes you? And I said, well, actually, sir, I would love to be a plant manager someday, to do what you're doing. And he said, man, that's great. I believe you can do it, man. I believe here's what I want you to hear, Derek. To be a plant manager someday, here's what you got to do. You got to be the best engineer you can be today. And then when you get an opportunity to be a supervisor, you need to be the best supervisor you can be in that moment. And then when you get the chance to be a superintendent or a production person over many more, you need to be faithful in that moment. And he said, trust the process that when the time comes, you can step in to be a plant manager. But he said, this is what I need you to do today, Derek. Be the best engineer you can be today. And that profoundly shaped my thinking. That I was called to be faithful with the little things and to trust God with the process of what he wanted to do in the future. And so I would encourage you, what would it look like for you in this moment where you're frustrated, you're let down? What would it look like for you to say, God, I'm going to embrace this moment. I'm going to grow where I'm at. And I trust that in this season that I don't understand, you are conforming me into your image. You're working on my character, and that as I'm consistent with faithfulness in my character, my reputation will go before me, and in the future, doors will be open that I don't even know about, right? Exactly what happened to Daniel. His reputation preceded him. He was faithful in the little, and God used it in amazing ways. And so what happens is the king has a dream. So he calls all his wise men in, and he says, listen, I need you guys to tell me and interpret this dream. And they're like, okay, well, tell me the dream, right? Because it's what they've done many times. And he says, hey, I know how this works. I'm going to tell you my dream, and you're going to tell me what I want to hear because you don't want to be killed. I know how this works. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to really test if you hear. I want you to tell me the dream I just had, and then you interpret it. Then I'll know it's just and right. Isn't that a great wise king like to do that? And guess what? They couldn't interpret the dream because they had no idea what was going on. And so he says, okay, you guys can't do it. I'm going to kill you all. Take you out. You're done. So the word goes out. All the wise men, including Daniel and his three friends who hadn't been brought before the king yet, were all getting taken out, once again, up against the ropes. And Daniel gets wind of this, and look what he does in chapter 2, verse 17. It says, then Daniel went to the house and made known the matter to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and he told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed when the rest of the wise men of Babylon, right? Here's what I need you to hear. There's two final points I want to make today. When you find yourself up against the ropes of life and you feel like there's no hope, we feel like I don't see a way out. Here are two things that we can see Daniel do and what I would encourage you to do. Number one, seek God in community. Where does Satan want you? Where does he attack you when you are isolated? And what's the first thing we want to do when I feel like I got a wound and I don't know what to do? I want to isolate myself. I don't want anybody to know that I'm struggling. And we isolate and we are just chopped liver for Satan to come and devour us, right? That's exactly what he wants. So I'm going to challenge you when you feel like you're up against the wall, things are coming against you. What I want you to do is to go to your friends that you trust that love Jesus and say, hey, will you pray for me? Not go and tell them all the things people have done to you. That's not of God. But to say, hey, will you pray for me that I would hear God and I would seek God, that you would pray for me? And this is what Daniel does. He says, guys, hey, come here. We're going to be dead real soon. We got to get a word from God. And so I want you to partner with me that I would hear God and I would know what to do. They sought God in community. It's so beautiful, so important for us to do that. That's why we're not supposed to be on our own. There's no such thing as an island Christian. God never intended that, to be in community right here. But the second thing that we should do as we're seeking God in community is to be anchored in truth. Anchored in truth. Remember, we talked about this last series, that what is the first piece of armor that we are to put on? It's the belt of, come on, somebody tell me that, listen, one time. the better truth, right? The better truth. We're gonna tighten it up, right? Because that's where the rest of the armor is gonna be surrounding, right? The belt of truth, asking God, God, what is true? Like, I see my circumstance. I see my workplace. I see my home. I see all these things not happening. This is what I see, just like the servant. I see this. But God, what is true that I can't see? What are you doing right now in this moment that I am not aware of? God, what is true? And as we're asking that question, guess where we should go? Be rooted in the truth of God that's been revealed in his scriptures. So when we're seeking with our friends, we should always take the wisdom that they give us and we should put it before the cross and say, Jesus, is this true? Because let me tell you, Job can tell you about his friends not having the best advice sometimes. Anybody else said amen to that? So we seek God in community, but we also, everything's got to be submitted to the word of God, the truth of God. And when we do that, there's hope. Because with God, all things are possible. I want to encourage you and inspire you, hopefully, a little bit with this video of somebody who had a tough spot at work and leaned on the truth and saw things totally change in her career. So enjoy this video.
I'm Tasha Salyer. I've been coming to Cross Fellowship now for around 2.5 years, and I'm here to talk a little bit about my career. I was in a program at work that moved temporary managers around until they found kind of a permanent location. I had been managing for 9 months and felt like I kind of knew what I was doing. And then I was asked to move to a new department. And every agent in the department had more tenure than me. Some of them had, you know, so much tenure that they had been with the company longer than I had been alive. And I was just really struggling every single day. I just felt like such a victim. You know, why would I have been yanked out of this process that I felt really confident and comfortable in and placed in another process where I knew nothing and I felt like I was really struggling to learn it. And so I was at church one Sunday and we had a guest pastor and he talked about a Bible verse in Joshua. So the verse says, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be dismayed, do not tremble." And so I just started reminding myself of that. I wrote it in dry erase markers on my mirrors. I wrote it in my planner. I had reminders on my Outlook calendar that would pop up. I said it to myself when I was on conference calls and I was struggling to know, you know, when to speak up or what to say. And over time, things just started to get easier. I spoke up on the conference calls and I worked to develop relationships with the people under me. Eventually, you just need fewer and fewer reminders because it just becomes part of who you are. And so, you know, I'm not writing it on my mirrors every day now, right? And I don't have a reminder popping up on my Outlook calendar at work. You know, but sometimes I still say it and I'll have that later on to help me get through any difficult things.
Yeah, let's give it up for Tasha sharing her story and God did. You know, what I love about Tasha's story is that she was willing to receive truth. She wrote it down. She meditated. She preached to herself, if you saw her, heard her say that. But the biggest thing that she did that I think is so important is she believed what truth was. She believed, right? And so, man, the enemy, what is he going to do? He's going to try to attack you with accusations and lie and lie and lie. And what do we do in this response to those accusations? We hold up truth. God, this is what truth is. I'm gonna stand on that even when my back is against the wall, even when I feel like Daniel, where I was totally let down and my life isn't turning out the way I wanted to. What's it look like for you to grow where you're planning, to be faithful with what God has given you, and to seek God in community and to be anchored in truth? This is what it looks like in Daniel's life for a rally, and maybe it'll look like that for you. Today we're gonna end with communion, so I'm gonna ask the communion team to go ahead and grab communion. And really what we're doing as a church in this moment is we are embracing these last two points, right? When we have corporate communion, what are we doing? We're coming together as a community, together, recognizing our need for Jesus, and we're centering our thoughts on truth. And you ask, what is truth today? Don't take it from me. This is what the truth is this morning, that Jesus was a man who lived and walked this earth. He died a very real death on a cross. He was raised 3 days later. A few days after that, 40, 50 days later, he was ascended to the Father where he is today, and one day he is returning. That's the truth that we can stand on today. So as we do this, I pray that we would recognize that, that you're not alone. God is with you, but you're also in community here. And that if we're centered on truth, we have no idea what God would do. So as they pass out the elements, enjoy this song.